Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Hi, Elizabeth. Welcome to the Retro Remix podcast.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here. So before we get started, I want to share with the audience that Michelle, or Macy Reeds, is joining us for this interview. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Laura.
So Elizabeth, tell us a little bit about yourself. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm locked in the house with my daughter and three dogs. And once in a while we go out for a walk, and that's about it.
Yeah, I think it's just like we're just hunking down at home. So
today I discovered that I could get mailed dog food. I was so thrilled from Target. Target would mail me dog food.
Yes. And have you tried Chewy also?
Well, that's good.
No, maybe I should try that too.
Yeah, they sell you all types of pet stuff. Like if you have a cat, they sell you litter box and litter stuff. So, and like dog treats. Yeah. So, you know, shameless plug to Chewy. So that's awesome. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Am a historical romance author. I've been writing for about, I think, 15 years now, which makes me really, really old. I live in Minneapolis, Minnesota. We just passed a freakishly cold snap. We don't usually have a cold snap in the middle of October. And like I said, I've got three dogs. They're all sitting around me. What else? I think that's about it.
Oh, this is so exciting. I love this.
So what inspired you to become a writer?
Well, I've been reading romance since I was about 13. I think about 14 or 15, I really got into it. That's one of my dogs. I don't know if you can hear it.
That's so cute.
Not cute when she keeps doing it. Oh, sit down. That's a good girl. Hopefully she's happy now. Anyway, so I'd been reading romance for a very long time, like voraciously. I used to go to the library when I was a kid and get 12, if I could do it, or more books and read them in a week. So when I got older, you know, I've always had also stories I used to make up in my head. And it just got to the point where I was like, oh, maybe I should try this myself. And I, at the time I started, I gave myself, I think it was 2 years to get published, 5 years, which is kind of actually very short. It's a short time. Publishing is, at least back then, took forever. Nowadays you can self-publish, but back then you had to do through, you know, New York publishers. But I think I actually made that deadline.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. So what was that journey to get that first book published?
It's so funny because I it makes me think of my kids' childhood. Mm-hmm. So I started writing because my mother told me I should get a job. And for some reason I thought romance writing would really be a good job. Which it's not, by the way. So I started writing, and I, like, the first year I kind of did it, you know, off and on. Second year I got down to business. And I think I finished The Raven Prince, my first published book, like in 3 years, something like that. Mm. So then back then you had to get an agent. So I sent off, you know, queries to every single agent by snail mail. That was, and if they said they wanted it, I'd have to mail the entire paper manuscript, which was kind of big. But I remember once I was driving from my parents' house in Minneapolis, and at the time we lived in Illinois, and my agent called, this person who was going to be my new agent, and I was so excited, but you know, it was like an important call. So I pulled over to a gas station and my kids were, I think the oldest one was maybe 12. Mm-hmm. The younger one was like 8 or 9. I gave them a 20, which was a lot of money for us back then, and told them they could buy whatever they wanted in the store while I talked to my agent. And I remember them coming out and they're standing in front of the car, waving their, you know, candy. And they brought me change. They didn't spend it all.
Oh.
Anyway, so I got an agent. We queried for about a year. It's a like heartbreaking process. And I got I was sold in about a year, and that was my first book. It was The Word of Prince.
That's amazing. That's an amazing journey. So
for a long time, and at the time, you don't know if you're ever going to sell. I mean, I don't know if people are still, you know, pursuing publishing with big publishers, but there's a point where you think you're going to do it, but nothing's come up yet, and it's just such a tense situation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I can imagine. Mm-hmm. Do you follow an outline, or do you just see where the story leads you when you're writing?
Well, you know, I always try to write an outline, and sometimes the outline is like I make a spider web sort of, I think that's what they call it these days, but I used to get a big cardboard, you know, thing from one of the, I'm stamping at my dog because she's growling at another growl dog. She's getting old and tested all the time. Anyway, so I used to like, you know, just connect the characters, if that makes sense, write out what the characters I needed. Yep. And that kind of stuff. I have done an entire book chapter by chapter, scene by scene, and I believe it was the first scene where everything changed. After that, it was like, okay, there's no point. So I try to do an outline. I don't usually use it. I know the high points usually. I know what I'm trying to work towards. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Like sometimes you just kind of have to let the story unravel, like as you discover it, and sometimes. Yeah. You may know what the scenes are and you may know who the couple is, but you get to see the destination, you know, as you write it through.
Working toward a specific scene. So I know, mm-hmm. you know, I'm excited about this couple because this X is going to happen. And so towards that scene, I do a lot of revision though, a lot of revision after I've written the first draft, which is usually almost an outline. It's you know, it's really scarce.
Mm.
So the little fairy tales that you add, do you kind of have that idea at the beginning too, or do you just kind of plug that in at the when you're done writing the?
For a long time, I had to wait till I had the fairy tale before I wrote the book. If that makes sense.
It's okay. Yeah.
Yep. I didn't have the fairy tale first, but I might go back to waiting for the fairy tale first because it kind of, I don't know if readers get much from it, but for me it's like a foil to the main story. So often there are subliminal, I don't know if it's subliminal, but you know, it's kind of follows the main story backwards sometimes. I can't explain it, what I'm saying, but
no I understand. Yep.
Yeah.
So in terms of your characters, how do you develop them? Do you meet them? Do you have an idea of who the hero or heroine is going to look like or side character is going to look like? Do they come to you? Do they speak to you? How do you get to know them?
They don't speak to me. I don't have dialogues with the characters. Okay. I sometimes swear at them, but I don't have dialogues with them. At one point I thought, I came up with the theory that there are two kind of writers. Mm-hmm. There's the story driven and the character driven. Mm-hmm. I'm definitely character driven.
Mm-hmm.
So when I start thinking about a book, which actually I usually do several years before I actually write it, because mm-hmm. I'm writing in series. Mm-hmm. I start with thinking about this character and who, if it's like male, it's either hero or heroine I already have, right? Sometimes I have the couple, but all I need is one character. And then I think about who would be the worst possible person to fall in love with, or who would be a really good foil. Anyway, so, and then I usually have the hero and heroine, and I mostly just think about it when I'm in the shower or gardening, you know, and I usually know who they are as a person, if that makes sense. I kind of, you know the outside, because that's really easy to do, you know, they're red haired and whatever. It's the inside that's really important, I think, you know, what this person is like and why they haven't found love yet sometimes. What would be their triggers, that kind of stuff. So definitely character, yeah.
So what is your writing environment like? Do you like quiet, alone in a room, or music, or something in the background, or?
Well, I used to go to coffee shops. I can't do that anymore. I used to go a couple times to a coffee shop. I really liked it because it got me out of the house, and also you're going there for a purpose, if that makes sense. So if you go there, you got, and then you have nice coffee and pastry or something too, you know, as the like a carrot and stick thing. Now I can't do that. Oh, and by the way, when I went to coffee shops, I usually would have earbuds. So I like listening to music, but it's the music I listen to is often like I'll listen to the same album for an entire book. Because I'm listening to music, if it's new, I pay attention to it. If it's something I've heard before, it becomes background noise. And often it's a type of, for instance, is it Hoser or Huser, the singer?
I think it's
Hoser. Yeah. The Irish singer. So I think the first, maybe only, album was the background for, I can't remember what it was, but it was funny because after I finished the book, my editor sent me a link to a Russian dancer that was dancing to his music and said, "This really reminds me of your book." So it's funny that she got that.
Oh, yeah.
I did. It was very interesting. So often I'll have a specific album and whatever's being sung, or the, you know, if it's the kind of music will make me think of the book, if that makes sense. So it's almost a prompt as well.
Yeah, I love this. So what, when it comes to historical romance, what does your research process look like? It's like so curious because you're like, you're writing a whole, you know, a whole new era.
Well, it's really funny because people often ask that. And I remember when I first started writing, I went to the library, public library, and I checked out everything on the 1700s. It's a little bit different. Actually, it's a lot different from the 1800s, the Regency books that most people set their historical set. And I remember like photocopying stuff. That's how long ago it was. Basically, I read everything. So there was like this learning curve. And then once you have gotten that curve, so you know what the guys are wearing, you know that women are wearing, you know that matches weren't invented yet, you know that, you know, what the type of travel it was, the kind of, you know, architecture, art, all that stuff. You have it in your background, so you already have that. So then what happens is usually I don't do research for a specific book before starting it because I have all that background. It's when I'm writing and I'll get to a point and I'll be like, we're chairs upholstered in dark green. Was that in? I don't know. You know, recently I did and this had nothing to do with the book, by the way. I did what I'm working on. I did a whole research on Rococo versus classical style and when exactly they became more important. And it turns out there was some overlap, but I was like, can I make this house classical? And it turns out I could, so.
I love this. Sometimes research can be a rabbit hole of where you just like, you just go down a rabbit hole.
It usually is, yeah.
So
I do that. Yeah. Okay, so who out of all the heroes you've written is your favorite and why?
Okay, so it used to be that I'd say I couldn't, you know, pick one because it was whatever hero I was working on. But then I wrote Duke of Sin, and the hero in there, Val, Valentine, is definitely my favorite. He's kind of psychotic. Definitely sociopath. So he's actually the villain. So I wrote the book like from the villain's point of view, basically. What would happen if you had the villain's point of view? And he's doing villainous things, and he falls in love with this woman who's not villainous, and it's like, you know, it takes him aback. But he's the kind I based him mostly on, well, partly on Loki, the movies. Where this guy could do anything in any given situation, basically. And he's very
still lovable in his own way.
Yeah, still lovable in his own way. 95% of the readers liked it. There's a strong 5% who are like, this guy is a psychopath and I don't like him.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, yeah, he is. But it's one of my favorite books.
Imagine, like, you know, writing someone who's like can be polarizing to be kind of like fun, you know. Yeah. So it's not your typical hero that you're writing.
It's really fun to write because he would literally do anything. So I'd be writing along and it's like, oh, I think he's gonna take off his clothes here, you know. It just, you know, happened. So it was really fun.
I like those books because I read so many historical romance that when I come across a different type of character, I'm all for it because it sometimes gets a little, you know, the
it's
same.
It's hard to write so, unique characters. Yeah, I usually.
Yes. And I can imagine. Yeah. How hard that would be.
It is very hard. I know a lot of writers that I've read have basically the same kind of hero or heroine, which for them is really working, if that makes sense. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing, that, you know, it's like Stephanie Lawrence, when I was reading her, when I first started reading her, all her male characters had a certain kind of mood. I noticed that they were always prowling, for instance. You know?
Yes.
Yes. Good, similar. I liked that hero. So that was, you know, something I enjoyed. But I, as a writer myself, I want to try new things, try new characters each time. So,
yeah, I can imagine. It might just mean like spicing things up. You're like, oh, let me just dive into somebody else's world, you know? Yeah. That gives you a sense of, you know, cool. So, but I got to agree with Stephen Lawrence, the heroes. They're quite something, so. Thank you. So what is your favorite trope to write?
I think I stalled out, didn't I? I don't actually think about writing a trope, if that makes sense, when I write a book. I'm talking about the story between the people and it's, you know. But if I was writing a trope, if I was going to give a trope to the books, it'd be arranged marriage.
Yes.
And also enemies to lovers, which is also what this book is about. So I like tension, you know?
Yes.
I like arranged marriages because it's strangers getting to know each other and finding out more
about
the person. And often that person, at least in my books, that person's totally different from their outer persona, if that makes sense. Enemies to lovers, because it just creates fun arguments and dialogue.
There can usually be fantastic banter between enemies.
Or tension.
I'm here for the marriage to convenience, the arranged marriage, the forced proximity, the reason they're strangers, so like they have to get together, you know. I'm all for it. So
So one of my favorite things about your books is that they do, you know, they take place in the 1700s.
Yeah.
It's not the normal you know, 1800s. So what made you decide on that time period?
Well, I've been asked about that a lot. And initially I used to say it was because I read Scaramouche and a lot of the swashbuckler type of movies.
Yeah.
And in this time period, you can have guys walking around with swords. Mm-hmm. Then the updated Poldark came out and I realized that when I was 10 through 12 about, I not only saw the movie at that time, the TV show, which was BBC thing, I also read all the books because we were in Britain for when they, I don't know if they just come out or if they were, you know, fairly new. My mother bought the books and I read them, which if you've read the books, may not have been really appropriate for 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
But the guy who played Poldark was really sexy to a 12-year-old. And I think that just imprinted on me. I imprinted on him. And that's, I think that may be the real reason I did 1700s. Now there's, takes place, I think, after the Revolutionary War. So I'm a little bit earlier than that. When I wrote The Maiden Lane, I deliberately picked the 1730s and 40s because that was when the gin wars were going on with everybody being addicted to gin. And I wanted to make that a main point of the series.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that leads into the next part of the question. Okay. The characters from different classes. Was that something you decided on or just sort of happened that way?
I think
it's something I absolutely love in that romance too, by the way.
I decided when I was doing Maiden Lane that I wanted to do this world that represented 1760s London, which was people from literally all walks of life. And that sounds like a cliche, but there were very, very rich people who were wearing clothes that, you know, took years to embroider and stuff. It was just amazing. Who literally had gold on their walls. And there were also people who were dying of starvation in the same city. Mm-hmm. You know? And it just, to me, that sounded so interesting. Also, I believe it was the largest city in the world. So there were people in London, because it's a port, from all over the world, you know, Chinese people, African people, just, you know, and of course, all over Britain. So, I mean, there were people from the country, from Scotland, from Ireland, coming into Britain. And I wanted to have everybody. I didn't want just the upper crust. I guess it's, first of all, I think they're interesting. In some ways, I find it more interesting for a person of lower class to have made it, because the heroes usually are pretty rich or at least have a job. And to go from lower class, you may or may not have an education, you certainly don't have money and all that, and you've got all the prejudice of classism against you. To go from that to have made it is, in some ways, more heroic, I think, than a guy who was born into a title. That makes sense. So I really,
definitely.
Yeah, I really like that progress. Yeah.
I love it. It's unique enough that, you know, someone who gets bored by reading lots of peerage, lots of the time, I think it's interesting to see, you know, journey of different classes in historical romance.
That's definitely in this new book, a thing.
Yeah.
They give you a copy to read of the new book?
Yes.
Oh,
so let's talk about the new book. So it's Marching of Lenience. There's actually some enemies to lovers. There's the fixer. What was the source of inspiration?
Well, if you read the first book in this series, the Grey Court series, I had two sisters, Lucretia and Messalina. Somebody said those are the worst names ever because they're Roman and both are tragic, known tragically, especially Lucretia. But I just thought it was funny that, you know, they're naming their kids after people were killed or stuff, you know, or murderers. And they had like this minder that was way in the background. You don't see them till like one or two pages towards the end. And I like the idea of this guy shadowing them almost in a creepy way, because he's working for their uncle who they hate. And he's not, he's doing it nefariously, you know, they don't like him. And he's lower class and he's, but he's sexy, if that makes sense. And yeah. I really like the forced marriage. I'm supposed to call it arranged marriage because apparently that's better. People don't want a forced marriage, but it really is a forced marriage. She gets married because she has to. She loathes him. At the beginning, she really hates him. So I like that.
I love the progression. For someone who just, it would never work for me, the forced marriage would never work for me, but I have to say I adore this trope so much. Like, I live for the progression of, like, will they, won't they? What's going to happen? They hate each other. They're supposed to, they're going to be together. But, you know, there's a whole journey that takes place that leads you to that, you know, we're going to fall in love. Like, it's going to be happily ever after. I know it's like, yeah.
It's based really upon what I just said before, that, you know, they presume something about each other, mm-hmm. and they're wrong in what they, especially yes. her with him. Because all she's seen him do is work for her uncle and be kind of this villain, because he's like the uncle's fixer, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So he was a guy beating up other people and making sure, you know, whatever happened. And so she really hates him and then begins to learn more about him,
mm-hmm.
where he came from, and what his life is.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
I really liked him. Yep.
So what can we expect for the rest of the series? Like, is there going to be more books?
Oh, there's definitely going to be more books. So it's called the Grey Court series. Mm-hmm. And I've got two threads going on. One is the two families that ended up as enemies because mm-hmm. of tragic mm-hmm. happening in the background. So the heroine in this one is of the Grey Court family. And so we'll be going back and forth about that, and eventually it will talk about, you know, who, what happened on that night. The other thread throughout the series is the wise woman. And my editor
at first
was not sure about this, but then she's like, okay, I get it. So basically it's a mythical thing. I thought to myself, this is what my thought was. So there were druids in England and probably priestesses, female priests, before the Romans came, right? So what if these female priests, instead of being wiped out by the Romans, went underground? So that's basically it. They're a tribe sort of women who are descended from those women. Some of them are brought in, who live in this little, you know, place up in Scotland, but they've got spies and things in like London, and they work to help women. So in the first book, there's a whole thing about and the other thing is that they've been mistaken for witches, like literal witches, by the bad guys. There's a bunch of bad guys trying to kill them, literally kill them, because they think they're witches. So like in the first book, there was a strand going through about a bill that was going to come before an act that was going to come before Parliament, in which it would renew witching laws, which had been this by this time taken down. So witch hunting, basically, and they're trying to stop that. In this book, there's not much about the wise woman, but the one afterwards, the one I'm working on, it's going to be a woman who grew up in that conclave. It's Elspeth. Who's been introduced late in the thing. But she's a little bit like a fish out of water, or what is it? There's a trope where it's a stranger in a strange land kind of thing. So for instance, she's got this thing where she finds butlers very suspicious. What are they doing?
Yeah.
Why are they there? and other things like that, where she just kind of looks at the society and says, this is stupid, or that's very strange, or this is wonderful. So she's kind of a blithe, like, you know, almost innocent, childlike. And I'm putting her up against Julian, who's the head of the Grey Court family, who is very cold, doesn't talk. It's very
simple. Oh, what a great pair.
Yeah, he tried to kill the hero in the book we're talking about now. So yeah, I think that'll be fun. I've got several scenes I'm working towards in the book. And for those who really like Lucretia, she kind of stole several scenes in the first two books. Mm-hmm. She's the one after, so she's going to be the fourth book in the series.
So I got a question, because you write some long series. Do you plan them ahead, or do they just, it's just the nature of the beast, based on readers, based on the publisher, based on book spots, like, you know, the series continues. At this point,
let me just tell you something. The only reason I quit doing Maiden Lane is because my agent had told me at the time, or later on she said she hadn't, that I needed to end the series so we could either move to another house, publishing house, or at least use that as a negotiation tactic. I would have kept on going with Maiden Lane otherwise. But so I like long series. And generally, when I start, I have a few characters or a few tropes that I know I'm going to do, and I'm working towards, if that makes sense. So, like I said, I know what the next two books are going to be about, but things may change. In the first book, I introduced a character, and I realized I really had to do her story. Her name, the blonde. God, I can't remember my own character's name, but she's a side character in the first two books. So, she's got a marriage that will go bad, and so it's a long arc. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I love it.
So I'm arcing out things, if that makes sense. Yeah, and sometimes things change, you know.
Mm-hmm. As someone who loves long series to binge on, you're calling someone's, you know, like I know it can be intimidating for some readers. But I love like being able to get lost in a world and just get new characters and come back to them and be like, oh, they're my friends, you know, getting to see them over and over.
I do try. I once read a book by a nameless author where in the first like four chapters, she introduced or reintroduced like 30 characters, 30.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh.
It was this big family. And I hadn't read the other books, so I had no clue who they were. And she was obviously doing this for fans, which was nice. But for me, it was like just a stall, the whole story. I'm like, what is all this? Mm-hmm. I do try when I write the books to make each one stand alone. So if you're just coming up, if you want to read The Duke of Sin, for instance, you don't have to read the other books first. It's going to be interesting because you would find out how I came into the series, but you don't have to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I can imagine.
I like that because...
Go ahead.
I like that because I'm also like Laura, I love a big series and I'm actually a stickler for reading from the beginning.
Yeah, I do that
through. Too. So, right. And I have a lot of people ask me, oh, can I just read this? And I'm like, well, yes, but I highly recommend you start the first. Yeah. But when it's a big series, they're kind of a little bit hesitant on that. And so it's good to know that, you know, some of the big series, you can definitely read them alone. You don't need
to. Well, a lot of times too, people pick up a book and it's in the middle of the series and they're like, well, can I read this? It's like, I get people asking me, like, yeah, of course. You know, you can go back to start reading or you know, that book by itself is fine.
Yeah, and I know people who read out of order, like that's part of their jam. They're like, I'm gonna be lost. And I'm like, okay, I'm a sticker for the beginning, but you know.
I read a lot of mysteries and I have to go back to the very first, which is often not the best book in a series for a long, you know?
Yeah.
So, but I have to start with that one, yeah.
So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity for you to share with the audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Questions like this are so hard to answer. I'd say romance, but lately I've been reading a lot of mystery because I write romance, if that makes sense. It makes it hard to just relax and get lost in the book, because that's why I read books, just get lost in them, and you know, it's escapism, it's fun. So something like mystery is a lot easier for me to do, but I do like my romances.
So a question I love to ask authors is, what is your favorite book outside of your own?
Well, you know, I saw that you sent a list of questions ahead of time. I saw that. I was like, oh, here's the problem. I've been reading so long and I'm so old that my favorite books are sometimes old. Let me go back and say, I pick favorite books by if I've read them more than once. If I look at, because I've got like a list on Goodreads, I have 5-star ones. And sometimes I'll go through them and I'm like, I don't remember reading that book. But then you'll hit one and it's like, oh, I should read that again. It was such a good book, you know? So those are my favorites. So things like Jane Eyre, I read over and over again when I was a child. Well, child being teenager.
Yeah.
And it came up on my list. I was like, oh, I need to read that again. who else? Oh, there's Elizabeth Lowell. I don't even know if she's alive still, but she had a very short medieval series. I don't think it's sold, so she stopped writing. I think it was her only historical series, but I loved it. I just loved it. Let me see if I can find out what the name is, because you'd have to find it like in a library or something. Untamed, Forbidden, and Enchanted. Loved those books.
I think I've read those, yeah.
Yeah. So these are books I've read over again until, you know,
the
book falls apart. Stephanie Lauren's Devil's Bride again and again. Mm-hmm. Recently, the most recent book I found on this list was K.J. Charles, Her Magpie Lord series. Have you read that? So it's a male.
No.
But it's historical, but also mystery and supernatural all together, which I kind of like sometimes. So I just
thought I'll definitely have to look at that.
Yeah, if you can get a good mystery in there, I really like it. So, but it's hard with romance, and it's hard for a mystery to have a good romance, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So tell us where you can find you online.
Where you can find me online?
Yeah.
Well, I'm most often on Twitter, Elizabeth Hoyt. I've also got a website, but I think people don't look at websites anymore, do they?
Yes, they do. We would check if there's updates and whatnot.
Yeah. So www.elizabethhoyt.com. That's my website. I'm not on Facebook too often anymore, but since the book's coming out, I'll probably be going back to that. And I've been told that I need to be on Instagram more often. This is for my daughter in Germany who posts things like little pictures of cactuses. So I'm needing to be back on there so that I can see her little pictures of cactuses.
That's amazing. So thank you, Elizabeth, for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a fun conversation.
Thank you, Michelle, for being on the show.
And thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatyourextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WhatToRead10 to save. Visit whatyourextblog.com/QueenBeeReads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. please visit whatyourrootsblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to Chad about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.